Welcome, everybody, to the SI Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina, and joining me this week are, we'll have two guests. We have Ken Rogers from Hard Knocks, which starts on HBO next Tuesday, always one of the best sports shows around, and you're going to hear from Andrew Martian of the New York Post. We'll go around the table on some media news, but we're going to start right off the bat with Ken Rogers, the senior coordinating producer for NFL Films, head of Hard Knocks, and he joins the SI Media Podcast right now. Ken, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm a huge Hard Knocks fan, and we finally get a taste of football this coming Tuesday with the with the first episode. Let's start with a very simple question. Why the Browns? How did it come about to do the Browns? I assume you guys want teams you haven't. I know you've repeated teams in the past, but we've never seen the Browns. Is that a big factor in picking a team for the upcoming season?
I think so. I think we'd love every team in the National Football League to at some point appear on Hard Knocks. That's our goal, certainly, is to always find a different team. Sometimes they repeat because they are an interesting story that are different than the previous times we've repeated. The Cowboys and Bengals, and those shows were different from each other enough that we didn't mind going back. The Browns were really our number one draft pick. I mean, from the start, we thought, what an interesting ground to build upon. The last two seasons have obviously been hugely disappointing. And what we look for in Hard Knocks is unique situations because, let's be honest, training camp's kind of boring. It's kind of the same thing every day in every NFL city. They run routes. They practice this. They go in and they study. They go to sleep. There's not that much fantastic material going on. So if you can start with some stakes and some really different terrain that you've never touched upon, you got a head start at least. And we certainly felt that from the beginning with the Browns coming off the winless season. How do you come back from that? That's right. Something we haven't explored. What are the steps that you have to take? What's the mindset that you have coming into the next season? Is it, how do you get yourself positive again after that? And that was before drafting Baker Mayfield and the rest of the draft picks. That was before Jarvis Landry signed with the team. So we were already in, and then when those things happened, it made complete sense. And I think Cleveland, as an organization, is in the same spot where they feel like, listen, we've hit the bottom. Let's start climbing and show people that we're climbing, and that we're dedicated to moving up this ladder that we seem to have fallen down repeatedly. So. There's a really good vibe there, and I think already our choice is paying off. We really sense a movement there. You know, it really feels like they're driven, as I'm sure they were in the past. But everyone, I'll tell you, every camp in the NFL has this feeling of hope, and you know, we're going to do great things. Who knows what's going to happen during the season? But I think they're going to be a really interesting preseason team.
How badly do you and HBO want them to sign Dez Bryant?
That would be, I'm sure it would be great for HBO. You know, we try to pride ourselves on being ready to do whatever, do justice to whatever storylines happen, because I can't sit here now and hope that Dez Bryant's going to be signed in the next couple of days, because then I'd be relying on that. And when and if it doesn't happen, oh boy, do we have a big 10 minute hole in the show? Right. What do I do? So we sort of always look forward to big news, and that would be great in terms of storytelling and addition of, you know, a player that a lot of people know and are interested in finding out about. But we are probably the most conservative when it comes to expecting things like that. We've just learned to expect the unexpected on this show.
Yeah. Give me some info here now. What is going on with this RV? So Baker Mayfield has an RV, but the cameras are not allowed in there. Is that accurate?
Well, you know, that's definitely what he has told the press. But I can tell you that we're reaching out to Tom Cruise to see if he'll join our cast, you know, of crew out there, so that we can obtain this Mission Impossible goal of getting in there.
Is the RV just for Baker Mayfield, or is it for all the QBs?
No, it's for all the quarterbacks. And okay. And honestly, it's one of those things that sounds and reads in the media as much more exciting than it is. It's a place for them to go sleep and relax between meetings and practices. The Browns have a room there full of 30 beds, but there's 90 guys in camp, so the quarterback's got an RV to sleep in. There's no secret society or parties, as far as we know, going on in there. But you know, we'll still cover it as a story. It's certainly caught on in the last week nationally. But my guess is people that are expecting some sort of ritual inside or secret conversations are going to be disappointed. It's pretty much a place to escape everything and just chill out, I think.
It's funny to see the evolution of the athlete through Hard Knocks, because I remember when the Texans were the featured team, one of the big sort of segments that was kind of memorable and funny was how J.J. Watt sneaks off into this little corner for a nap every day, and now Baker Mayfield has an RV to take his naps.
So. Hey, sleep is important. Yes. They don't get much of it. Our crews don't get much of it. Our editors don't. So we get a little jealous when we see that the players get to take a nap in the middle of the day.
So tell me about the weekly process, if you don't mind. Sure. You know, you go through 7 days, that you could probably talk about it for hours, but just for the people listening, I'm curious. So the show, if I'm not mistaken, I think the show has aired on different days over the years. I remember it used to be Thursday, Wednesday. Now you're up to Tuesday.
Yep.
Well, why is that? Why earlier in the week? Any specific reason? Just a programming thing? Or
I think it's a programming thing, but also the NFL week in the preseason does sort of correspond roughly to the regular season, and that games are Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Right.
So the natural pace of a camp is you're preparing for that preseason game, and then there's a day off, which would be Friday or Saturday or Sunday, and then you come back and you start preparing for the next game. So there is a sort of natural ending that allows most of the storylines to conclude by, say, Saturday, Sunday.
Right.
When things happen on Monday, of course, we try to get them in the show, you know, and do justice to them, as we've done over the years with the biggest example being with the Jets.
Revis, was that?
Yeah, Revis showing up at the end of episode 5, which was shot, you know, 20 some hours before it actually aired. And we didn't know it was going to happen. We're hoping, I mean, we stretched the storyline out for 5 weeks and what's going to happen. And it was probably the last hour we were there. Here he comes walking on the field. And it was like, it was a gladiator moment. Right, it was incredible. Right. It's goosebumps. So what we do is just stay aware, because it's not like we stop shooting episode, say 2 at a certain time.
Right.
All we do is really just keep shooting, and some of it will make it into episode 2 and the rest continues into episode 3. It's a 24-hour a day shooting schedule. If the players are up and the players are doing something, our crews are too. And what that leads to is this year about 400 hours per week of footage shot on site. So that's tough enough.
Like, I don't mean to interrupt. Yeah. How many cameramen do you have, just out of curiosity?
There are 5 cameras at every practice, and then the robotic cameras that are shooting in all the offices.
Okay.
So
5 cameras at practice and robotics to catch 400 hours per week. It's pretty impressive.
Yep. I mean, we barely stop shooting, you know, for lunch.
Okay.
And then additional cameras up to 8-9 cameras additional will come in for the games to help cover all the wires.
Right, right.
So it's actually a small footprint for the amount of material we get. But the average comes out over the course of 5 weeks to be around 400 now. And so the footage is one thing, but then trying to turn that around in the time given, mm-hmm. which is 7 days, that's what makes Hard Knocks different from everything else. I think if you watch Survivor or a show like that, they probably shoot a lot as well, but they have months to edit the story together and make sure they get it right. I can tell you right now, I don't know fully what happens in episode one of Hard Knocks because not all of it has happened yet.
Right.
I don't know. Well, it's going to happen and we're going to put it on there.
When will you start the editing process for episode one?
So we edit as we go, okay. For sure. So there's a team of over 20 producers, filmmakers here at NFL Films in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, that will be assigned to different storylines by position group, by events. Someone will edit the opening speeches. Somebody will edit the quarterback section and on and on. And then we will come late in the weekend, start putting it into that probably results in about 3 hours of rough cuts. We start putting it into the form of the show that will air on Tuesday night. We never stop editing, just like we never stop shooting, because the material comes in and you're constantly updating storylines, finding better footage. 2 days into shooting, we could have put an hour of television on. We had plenty of material. None of it was especially great. Practice hadn't started yet. And as we go each day, it's sort of like relegation. You just sort of knock something off the list and say, oh, we got something better, so let's put this in there. And by the end of the week, our goal is to just put the most entertaining yet accurately informing 60 minutes on the air.
And the show airs Tuesday night. When does the editing for that episode end? When do you have to have it done and shipped to mm-hmm. HBO?
We begin the satellite feed and computer feed, and we actually even get a tape sent back with their staff. We start that at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. So we're not done until a couple
wow.
hours. There's plenty of times where I have to wrap up things or prepare for the next day, and I get home and the Hard Knocks logo is just coming up on the screen, and I literally just stopped helping this show get on air, and here it is on HBO. It's an incredible feeling.
I was expecting you to say 7 p.m. Monday, so you're actually editing the show on Tuesday and it airs on Tuesday. That wow.
Sure. I mean, there's a whole post-production process. It's not as easy as editing it together, of course, at NFL Films with our great score and our composers who write the music. The writing has to be done for Liev Schreiber. The color correction, the lower thirds of that give people's names, and the mixing of the music together with the sound. It's the last 24, 36 hours are a mix of creative and technical that probably 50 people here are working on the film in different departments to get their job done so that it can all combine mid-afternoon, late-afternoon, Tuesday to send out to HBO.
You mentioned Liev Schreiber, and mm-hmm. he's such a huge part of that show because he's so good. I was curious, when is he doing his voiceovers for the show? If it airs on Tuesday, is mm-hmm. he doing that Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon?
It's usually Tuesday morning.
Okay.
Yep, it's Tuesday morning, and we certainly have the ability, if something were to come up, we would reach out to him. It hasn't, that we would need to re-script, but there's never been an issue, which is a testament to our writer, Jerry Reimel, and Liev's professionalism when he reads. He's, He's the constant. He's the constant character of Hard Knocks because the team changes every year, but it's still the same person leading you through it. And he actually really sees it as a character. There are things that he wouldn't say because the character of Hard Knocks narrator wouldn't say that.
Right.
And that's just shows you how serious he takes it. And I still get goosebumps the first time you hear him voice something and it comes out on the air. It's
absolutely.
Like, oh, football has started.
Yeah. Be honest. Have you ever asked him to voice something for you personally? Like, you know, a wedding anniversary video for your wife or a kid's birthday? Because I would be doing that.
None of us have the guts because he's also a pretty tough guy. You don't want him showing up on your doorstep, you know, knocking and saying he has an issue with you. He's an incredible actor, but he has a presence where even over a computer line, which is how we record him, wherever he is in the world, whether it be L.A., New York, Long Island, overseas. He's been in Europe many times doing movies when we've voiced this and we find a studio for him. Even over the computer line, you all of a sudden you get respectful when he gets on. You just all of a sudden feel the presence, even through a computer line.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge part of the show. We know about Baker Mayfield. Guy's got, I think, a great personality. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a potential breakout star we may not know about for this season? I know it's early, but is there someone we should keep an eye on?
First, let me write down this name. Baker Mayfield, say should be in the show?
I have a feeling a lot of the Hard Knocks publicity will generate around Baker. Just a guess.
Okay.
Just
Mayfield,
a guess.
You say. I'll make sure. Yeah, I mean, we're still discovering that. There will be. There always is. Right now, the stars are definitely showing up. You know, we're having a great time telling the story of Jarvis Landry and Tyrod Taylor and Myles Garrett. There's the stars are all there. So we have everything we need on that list. And I think there's a couple people that we're choosing from. I actually think the breakout star is going to be Hugh Jackson. And he might not be all that much of a breakout for people who know him. Mm-hmm. But I think there's plenty of people across the country who would say they don't really know who Hugh Jackson is as a person or coach. And certainly what they've heard about his record in the last 2 years, to believe, you know, you might tune into the show and be unimpressed. I think that will go away. I think if nothing else, you can never guess what's going to happen on the football field. But if nothing else, people will come away respecting him as a coach and as a man, regardless of whether the team makes huge strides this year or not.
Right. Getting away from the Browns, a couple of overall questions about the show. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of the show. I've watched every episode of every season. I have said in the past, I've written this, I think, in my column on SI.com, though, I do think the show's been hurt a little bit by social media in terms of a lot of, you know, if Baker Mayfield does something crazy, we're going to see it in 5 seconds on Twitter. Do you feel like it's that's accurate or unfair? And do you feel like social media has presented a different challenge for you guys in putting out the show?
It's a different challenge, but it's probably a little opposite of what you would think. We're never really worried about social media as a competitor, in that our access and our scope of covering 90 players plus all the coaching staff, there's always plenty of stuff that no one knows anything about. And I'm not going to tell you them, but I know lots of things that are going to be in this show that you'll watch and you'll say that was an amazing moment and you have no idea it's coming. But there's plenty in this first episode. And the thing that has changed is if something does blow up on social media, and the RV might be a good example, it's harder to cast that aside and say, The RV isn't really something big, or this storyline, this player that everyone's talking about isn't very big. Let's put it aside because there's an expectation now that that's the big story at camp. When in actuality, it's the big story in the media, and when you are with the team, and certainly with all 90 players, it's not the big story of camp. The big story of camp is they're concentrating on football, and yeah, there's an RV in the parking lot. That's real fun, but on to the next play. And so it's not a huge, big topic of conversation, but you have to know that the audience expects it because they've seen it all over social media. So we've actually had to not necessarily see it as a competitor, like, oh, they, social media has hurt the access to the show. It's actually more like, it's added a layer of interest that we have to address for our fans.
And how much battle do you get from teams, not just the Browns this season, but in years past, over don't show this, don't film that? Is it, I'm sure it happens every year with every team. How does the ultimate decision come down on whether to listen to a team's request or not?
Yeah, you'd be so shocked at how very little that happens. And I always am. I think there's a great trust in how we treat things. And that has allowed us to show things that you might otherwise think a team would say, hey, you're not showing that. I think back to the Chad Johnson, I believe that time he was Ocho Cinco arrest in Miami. And it's very natural to think, well, the team's never, ever going to want, like, that's going away. And as many other teams in other difficult situations or not so flattering moments for someone involved, understood that the very best thing would be to just be open about it and say, here's how we handled it. And so showing the Coach Philbin Chad conversation really put a stop to everyone wondering, oh, I wonder if they screwed this up as an organization. I wonder what that conversation was like. I wonder if, they said this to Chad or that to Chad, or I wonder if Coach Philbin was forced to make this decision. And all these things that people would normally project upon the story, the transparency of that situation on Hard Knocks, really, you can't get more difficult than that as a filmmaker to try to cover. And the answer and the solution was, let's just show what happened, because then we don't have to worry about creatively how do we deal with it. We just show what happened. And we've always done that. We really pride ourselves on not twisting things out of perspective. And although Liev gets us from scene to scene, there's not a lot of editorializing by Liev, and so we leave it to the coaches to set the tone. We always say to the coaches, they always ask, well, what's your, message? What's your overall theme going to be? Are you going to talk about us as an 0-16 team? Or are you going to talk about us as I'm a new coach? Or are you going to talk about us as we're loud and boisterous like Rex and the Jets? And our answer is, we don't know. Whatever you do is what the show will feel like. So
Yeah, I mean,
if
it's
you.
almost, if you're going to sign up for the show, you have to sort of expect that you're going to, things are going to be shown that you may not love, but you did sign up to do the show. So if,
Yeah, there's no doubt. And especially at this point, there's a long, I mean, the show's been on since 2001, so there's a very long awareness of what the show is. And, I don't think it would be any surprise to any team to say, hey, so how are you, in what room are you going to cut players, and what day is that going to be? They wouldn't say, what, you're not showing that. Well, it's Hard Knocks. That's part of the story. So there's been very, very little. And there's really been nothing in terms of the embarrassment or things that we shouldn't be hearing. It's always about football. Like, these guys aren't really embarrassed or concerned about who they are or if they look bad or if, because at the end, they're all good people. I've never had a character on the show that would be like, wow, he's just really bad and we need to make sure he, I mean,
Brian
even people
Cox
who
1 year was not exactly a likable figure, but that's just me.
that's just
Just me.
you
Just
see
me.
I would like to hang out and smoke a cigar with him, but
Yeah. Ugh.
but that's the thing. They're all like, it's sort of like the the political landscape of the world. You can differ with somebody, but at the end, they're probably a pretty good person, you hope. And so there's never really been a worry about personal things. It's always professional. These guys are so intent on the slightest edge that they could get that they pour over what is going to be shown on the show Tuesday morning when they get to watch it to make sure that we didn't miss anything, that you know, they don't that we don't show a quarterback saying refrigerator, because that, you know, is a signal to the right guard to do something. Mm-hmm. And you hear it in the background, someone saying refrigerator, like, and we didn't even know what refrigerator. They're like, yeah, you got to get that out. That's the, oh my God, that's ridiculous that you would put that in.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, that's not, no one's going to miss that in our audience.
Right.
The Hard Knocks audience is a real mix between football fanatics and people who don't really watch football.
They want the personalities and they want the,
yeah.
I would assume, and it's always dangerous to assume, but I would be shocked if the answer was not yes. The Patriots are the dream team for one season.
Sure, yes.
But there is a 0% chance that will happen as long as Bill Belichick is the head coach.
I don't think there's a 0% chance, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, please do.
Coach Belichick allowed us in 2009 to follow him during the entire season for the debut episode of A Football Life.
Right.
And wore a wire every game of the entire season. He's the first coach in NFL history to do that. And he's since opened up to us about his championship seasons in the Do Your Job series that we put out two shows about the actual game plans. And he's done this, you know, incredible 30 for 30 that I directed last year with Coach Parcells. And
that was
and
a phenomenal 30 for 30. Phenomenal.
Thank you. Talked about something that you would think, well, he's never going to talk about that. And they both talked about it.
But I think sitting down with Parcells and talking about the past is different than having him as coaches, as players mic'd up during practice where, you know, he's known for being a psychopath, basically, and you know.
Well, look, I've been around him a lot. I would say there's probably moments like that, yeah. And I can tell you for sure there's moments like where he's the nicest person in the world, and you can't believe that you're talking to Bill Belichick in this way, and he cares so much about people. I think that's the way with a lot of coaches. They are driven so far. But I don't think. Listen, I'm not saying the Patriots have an 85% chance of being on the show one day. I'm saying it's not zero.
If you got the Patriots, you'd have to go to 2 hours an episode between Belichick, Brady, Gronk, Edelman. You have a lot mm-hmm. there if you get the Patriots. So I would love. I think as much as fans want to say they hate the Patriots, I think anyone, if they were the Hard Knocks team, I think that would be, you know, if you say there's not a 0% chance and, you know, 2019, let's go, let's do it.
yes, I'm trying to increase those odds every year, but, you know, as always, as long as they keep winning, they can't be chosen off the list of teams that can be compelled to do it.
Right.
And to be honest, to play devil's advocate, do you think that you get, I mean, you certainly get the interesting personalities, but there's not going to be a lot of goofing around at that camp.
Well, and I don't think, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm just being for myself. I would be more fascinated, I think, by the goofing around is not what I would be looking for. I'd be looking for what's going on with Alex Guerrero, what, you know, mm-hmm. Brady, you know, the Kraft Belichick conversations, perhaps. There, like I said, there would be so much there. I don't know where you'd begin, but
no.
We'll see. Yep. Last one, and I'm curious about, you're on HBO and the distribution of the show in this day and age. In full disclosure, I want to be honest. I have railed against the NFL about a million times because I don't think they're very nice in letting people use their clips and highlights and videos and that stuff. And you have a show that's, you know, in this day and age, something great happens on the show. People want to see the YouTube of it the next morning or the Twitter clip of it the next morning. and I feel like there's always been a limited amount of that stuff. Is it still going to be that way? Do you think you'll expand and maybe release more stuff, or is, because it's an HBO show, it's a pay service, you got to keep that stuff, you know, sort of tied up for, you know, you want people to watch the show. What's the philosophy there? Because the way things are now, it's, you know, so many distribution outlets, but you're still HBO. I'm curious about how you go about that.
So there's a couple answers to that, which is certainly 10 years ago when I started running the show, it was nothing goes anywhere. There's no such thing as putting something on the internet. That's insane.
Right.
We only want people to, you know, watch HBO to see this show. Now, you know, HBO even is interested equally in you turning on HBO at 10 o'clock on Tuesday nights and watching the show on their streaming platforms, HBO Go, HBO Now. And so even watching the show is much more available.
Yep.
The first episode is usually put out online in past years for people to see, of course, to let you know what the show is about, and hopefully you'll watch the next four. And we usually put out a couple minutes each week of the show before and after. Yeah. But the big change that we've made recently, starting last year and even greater this year, is we now have a dedicated social media crew on site that has the same access that our main cameras do.
Okay,
so
great.
We've created this Hard Knocks Now platform on our social channels, on HBO's social channels, on the team social channels, where you can watch Hard Knocks Now and see what's happening with the Browns now, rather than just getting the show come Tuesday. It's sort of like an additional bonus material bouquet to the fans, and it's not something that's frankly being paid for or is like this big thing with a sponsor. It's really just us trying to give more and interact more with our fans, because we know that people love talking about the show. We know they love watching the clips. We know they just get hooked on the funny moments, on the tough moments, and we can't put them all out there, because
right.
then why not, you know, why would you sign up for HBO? But there's a lot more these days if you know where to look.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And I write a daily column for SI.com where it's a, you know, I have a little opinion thing, a take on something, and then I round up the best of the internet. And the day after Hard Knocks, I'm always looking for clips, and it would be nice if, you know, more were available. So that's really where I'm coming from. I remember, I mean, I shouldn't tell you this, but it's funny now. back years ago, I used to write this column called Hot Clicks, which was very popular on SI.com. Thank God. Thank you for the readers. And like you said, back then, nothing was put on. And I would every day after Hard Knocks would air, I would always get emails. Do you have the latest episode? I'd go on YouTube and I would embed the latest full episode. And at like 10 in the morning and by noon, it was off of YouTube. And it was a game every week to see how long it would stay up where people could watch it for free on YouTube. But like you said, I mean, these days,
you don't think we know that we're watching?
Oh, I know. Oh, I know.
We got your number.
Those episodes would get taken down so fast it wouldn't even be funny. But I'd get it up there for about an hour or two for the diehard people who read the column right away.
Listen, so. I had to put this interview way up the ladder to get clearance to talk to an enemy of the state.
Yes,
here.
I'm sure. But I'm a big fan of Hard Knocks. Always have been, and I've watched every episode of every season, and I will. Definitely be watching every episode of this season. I'm a huge Baker Mayfield fan, too, so I'm very curious to see what happens. So
I appreciate it.
And I thank you for coming on and giving us the lowdown on one of the really great sports shows of all time. So I do appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and we're going to keep going for years to come, because that's our goal, every team, one day on Hard Knocks.
We're looking for the Patriots. All right. Thanks a lot, Ken. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay. Take
right,
care.
Take care. Joining me now, regular on the SI Media Podcast, one of my favorite things I've done with this podcast is made Andrew Marchand, the media reporter for the New York Post, a regular. He's back to opine on several topics. Andrew, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. How are you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing very well, and I want to start with something national here. people sometimes get up in arms because you're from the New York Post and I'm a New Yorker, and then we talk about Francesa, and, you know, the people not in New York get a little snippy. So let's go national to start with. Les Moonves got hit with the Me Too movement recently. Ronan Farrow, who, if he's writing about you, watch out, because it's not going to be good. Big story, and Les had is allegedly was doing very bad things, harassing women, sexually harassing women, and firing women if they didn't sort of go along with his advances. And I'm curious if this means anything for CBS Sports. If he, right now, CBS is doing an investigation. They've been quiet about it. Let's hypothetically say he's out at some point. You know, we always see him, it seems like, every Sunday in Robert Kraft's box. Does this do anything, CBS Sports, the NFL, SEC on CBS, or is it a wait-and-see thing?
Well, if you go on the presumption that Les Moonves won't survive this,
right,
and he's one of the legends of, you know, TV executives of all time, or, you know, corporate executives, really, but let's say he does not survive, yeah, this could be a seismic shift for sports at CBS, because it's unclear who would replace him. And so you don't know what that person thinks of the current media landscape. And although CBS has had a lot of success with the NFL, you know, the price tag is what it is, you know, very high. And, you know, it's unclear where everything is entirely going. So, you know, Moonves, it seems apparent, believed in the NFL and has believed in it. You know, CBS has been, you know, number one overall, you know, as a network for a long time now. And I think you have to point to Moonves for the biggest reason why. So if he is not back, it could have a big impact on sports. But, you know, that said, he could come in, somebody could come in to replace him, and that person may have the same sort of outlook on things, and so, you know, maybe it doesn't change anything, but yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and a person could come, you know, this is all hypothetical, obviously, but if Les is out and someone replaces him, they could be just as into the sports packages, if not more. But what also could change is, you know, Les, it's a Sean McManus CBS Sports deal, but if whoever comes in maybe doesn't like Jim Nantz, or, you know, wants a younger voice, or, I mean, there could be a ripple effect in multiple ways.
No doubt that people will look back at that. You know, just as you can look back on most things in life, this could be a very big shift. Yeah, Moonves seems like a Nantz guy, you know, and I think you could make a big argument. Nantz is tremendous at golf, maybe the best at golf, not as good at football. Hoops, you know, kind of just, you know, it doesn't do the regular season, comes into the Big Ten, does the NCAA tournament. You know, he's still fine, but is he the best you could do for that NCAA tournament final? I'm not sure. So if a person comes in and, you know, they're not as big a Nantz guy as Moonves and McManus are, then there could be a change.
Vern and Raftery, or Iron Eagle and Raftery, would be so much better than Nantz and Raftery. Just throwing that out there. And you don't need Grant Hill, by the way. My own opinion, not Andrew's.
I'd probably agree with those things.
All right, we're off to a good start.
I think it's better when we disagree, Jimmy. Just
I'm sure we'll get to that. Let's talk about Shams, because you've been on this story, I believe.
It's
Shams, excuse me. Oh, my God, what a terrible podcast host. Shams, you've been on this. I think
it's his name. Called you, like, you know, don't Jamie instead of Jimmy.
Don't you remember the famous Mike Francesa clip when a caller tells him the Colts coach's name is Jim Caldwell, not Cardwell, and he says, Caldwell, I don't care, whatever his name is, I'll call him what I want. All right, sidetrack there. Shams, I think you broke the story. He's leaving Yahoo, has left Yahoo. Looks like, is The Athletic a done deal or not?
As far as I know, it's not done, but I think it's going in that direction, and that's what we'll end up for aspect of it.
Now, explain this to me, if you don't mind. The Athletic is a pay subscriber site. Shams's whole deal is breaking news on Twitter. How does he help The Athletic?
In my opinion, it's a good play. It depends, you know, I don't know how much they're paying him, but I'll say that if the, I think anytime The Athletic can get mentioned in other publications, it's good for The Athletic. It's basically not only are you reporting something, but it's free marketing that is, you know, not paying for the marketing. But if Shams breaks something, it's all over the internet and they're giving The Athletic credit, I do think there is value in awareness for The Athletic to get subscribers. Now, Shams, well, if you look at Yahoo and you look at the articles he's written, he doesn't write long articles. There's no, you know, it's unclear if he can even write, you know.
Well, here's, you know, here's our first disagreement.
Okay.
Shams breaks a story that X player is being traded to X team. Reported by The Athletic. It's all over. SI says it's reported by The Athletic, ESPN. If I'm the average Joe Schmo at home, my thought process is not, okay, let me go subscribe to The Athletic. My thought process is, let me follow this guy on Twitter.
Yeah, but the biggest misnomer with the subscription site like The Athletic is the idea that everyone needs to subscribe to it for it to be successful. They need probably one out of 10 people who touch, you know, who have knowledge of The Athletic to subscribe to it.
Okay.
You know, maybe it might even be a lesser percentage. Because remember, The Athletic, because their distribution model, they can reach the whole world. So whenever billions of people are in the world, and they need, when you really think about it, a very slight percentage of it. So if Shams is breaking a story that is getting credit all over the internet, and more people hear about The Athletic, like, well, what's The Athletic? All right, let me check it out. And then all of a sudden they like it, or they, you know, they try it out, or they just have that awareness. You keep hearing about it. You're like, oh, maybe I should subscribe. And you have a friend who likes it.
Right.
You know, look, they have the biggest thing for, to me when you talk about The Athletic is the bigger thing is that they have to have quality throughout. You have to feel like now they're going to.
Well, they
try
definitely
to get
have quality. I mean, they have quality now. If you're being,
I'm not
fair.
Saying they don't. I'm not saying they don't, but I'm saying they're going to hook you because you like one subject, and then the other stuff you're like, oh, I get the other stuff, and it really doesn't cost a lot, especially if they give a lot of deals at the moment. So, so to answer your first question, though, yeah, I do think Shams is a plus hire for them in terms of awareness, and they'll probably. Hire some other big name NBA people, and all of a sudden, you know, they have another vertical where there's a lot of well-known people. So I think it does make sense.
Okay, fair enough. Did you think Alex Rodriguez's attack on Yu Darvish was fair or not fair? Sunday Night Baseball this past week.
I don't know if it's a case of fair or not fair. I mean, I just think, you know, A-Rod, I think we've talked about him a number of times. I know you don't like him at all. And I've had my ups and downs with A-Rod, having covered him on a personal level when I was covering the Yankees. So I know what he's about. I do think when A-Rod talks too much and there's too much airtime, you're going to have sequences like this where he's going to talk a little out of his behind and get himself a little bit in trouble where he's not precise with his words and can cause a major issue. And I think that's what happened here. And I do think Joe Wolf, Yu Darvish's agent in The Athletic, you know, made the comments where he went after A-Rod's credibility. And I don't think there's a great comeback for A-Rod when you attack A-Rod's credibility.
That's the point there. Anytime he's going to criticize a player, the player always has the hammer with him. And I think it's a problem. But listen, if A-Rod.
Yeah, can I tell you why I don't think it's a problem, though, Jimmy? I don't think it's a problem because I think and you're kind of not like this, I don't think, overall, is that I don't think people are like, looking at this like Woodward and Bernstein, like when they listen to A-Rod, they just want to be entertained. So if he has like a credibility issue, I agree with you. He does in the sense of when he gets into a spat with anybody, they'd be like, right. Listen, man, you did everything wrong. You're hated by your teammates for most of your career. And so who are you to say how a clubhouse should be run?
Bingo.
And he could argue, well, no, I've been through those things and whatever. But at the end of the day, if you're listening to a broadcast on a Sunday night or Fox's pregame show during the playoffs, you want to hear good stuff and be entertained. And if he, I'm not saying he does that, but that's really the bar to me, not if he has credibility or not. Yeah,
well,
he has no credibility in so many ways. He's a proven liar.
Right. But here's the other issue with that. I would agree with you, and I've beaten this drum my whole life from back when I was writing Hot Clicks to now. Sports should be entertainment, entertain me, etc. Here's the issue. I think, though, who's delivering the entertainment is a factor, and I think this is where, I've said this a million times, this is where I completely am in complete disagreement with ESPN. Nobody in America cares about Alex Rodriguez. People want to think they do, and because he was down and out with the suspension for a year and was extremely hated, and then he went from like being hated to just like whatever, and he had like, you know, a couple of good runs, I guess, on the Fox postgame, and people thought, everyone was, you know, the story of them became A-Rod's reclamation, A-Rod's this. The truth of the matter is, someone in Kansas City, someone in Chicago, someone in Boston, someone in Detroit, they do not care about Alex Rodriguez, and the perception of him with those people is still negative, despite what ESPN and Fox Sports want you to think. So when that's the case, it's hard for that guy to be the guy who's delivering your entertainment. And to prove this out, their ratings have been down this year, not up, after they went out of their way to make sure Matt Vasurgin was there to work with A-Rod. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think people will tune in for A-Rod. I think, you know, can he help a broadcast? I also just think at the end of the day, you know, A-Rod's okay to me on the air, but he just doesn't have that.
Right.
He's not, like, so quick on his feet. It's a lot of rehearsed stuff, and so he's good. He's okay.
Right.
I don't need A-Rod. It's one game a week, but it's not great.
Like, the narrative from the A-Rod supporters is he loves baseball. He eats, drinks, and breathes baseball. He writes, watches every game, writes his notes. Big deal. That doesn't mean you're good on the air.
Yeah, well, he is very smart on baseball. When you could actually talk to him about baseball, and he talks about baseball, he's the most normal, at least in my experience, than whenever he talks about anything else. So, I mean, in that regard, I do think he has some skills in that manner. But it's just, if you go look, I mean, I think the Big Lead posted it. You guys might have as well. But him smelling that salsa the other day. It's just like, what is he doing? And then I said this before. Get up. Here's a get up idea. You have A-Rod on. There's a segment every week. A-Rod eating food. Him like trying to eat a hot dog. Him trying to open a water bottle. Him smelling salsa. I mean, I would guarantee you that ratings would spike for sure.
I would still not watch it, but I'd probably post the videos and train of thoughts and make fun of him. So that would be
there. Fun. You go. All right, that's what I'm talking about. So.
ESPN finally. This happened, I think, 2 weeks ago, but I haven't mentioned it. They named the announced team for the NFL Monday night season opener of Jets-Lions. It's Beth Mowins on play-by-play. Brian Griese replaces Rex as analyst. Rex did the game with Beth last season. That seems fine to me. I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's fine. Anything there?
It's fine. Yeah. I mean, like, I agree with you. It's
Rex
nothing,
was
no big
terrible
deal.
Last year.
Either
so,
way, it's one game.
Yeah.
Rex was terrible, but they put him in a bad spot. I mean, Rex, I'm not saying Rex could be good, but I will say that your first time out, putting on the Monday night stage, people are trying to make him out to be the next John Madden, and he really didn't know what he was doing.
Right.
He's with, you know, Beth, who's you know, very solid, but she's making her first appearance, and, you know, it's a big deal that she's doing the game on Monday night. And so I do think it wasn't the best. You know, I don't know how well they know each other. Before that, I don't think they knew each other well. And so the chemistry when you're doing a broadcast, I just don't think they put him in a great position last year.
Brian Griese is fine, so there'll be nothing wrong with this booth for that first game. Rex was brutal last year.
Yeah, it's better than like Mike and Mike. Or
absolutely,
when Berman do it.
Absolutely,
yeah, that's when they got their
the
really
second
out of their
game will be the second game will be impossible to take because no matter how good Tessitore and Witten and McFarlane are. It's going to be 3 hours of John Gruden fellatio. It's going to be hard to take. It's going to be hard. You know already. That's what it's going. It's going to be a 3 hour John Gruden show.
Well, but they keep saying how much better they're going to be than Gruden. So how much the chemistry of this new Monday night team is going to be better than Gruden McDonough. I think they'll focus on Gruden. But he is the story. I mean, John Gruden is the story.
Yeah, but
I mean,
you know what?
SI,
here's the thing.
You're writing a story about that game. What would you write about?
But here's
about John Gruden.
But here's the thing: 10 o'clock Eastern Time, Monday night, after you've watched football for 12 hours on Sunday, and you got to get up at 7 in the morning. The only people watching that game are the people who want to watch the game. They don't need the John Gruden 3 hour soap opera. They just want to watch the game. But ESPN's not going to give you the game. They're going to give you 3 hours of John Gruden.
Well, here's the one thing I will say. I'm going to let them do the broadcast before I decide. I don't think it's fair to tell them before they even do the broadcast.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
To critique it. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's like me critiquing tomorrow's trainer thoughts. Just, you know, it's going to be terrible because you're going to, you know, it's not right.
Probably will be. We're in the middle of summer and I have nothing to write about. But that's true.
I mean, I was trying to just say that without being so straightforward with it.
Witten's off to an interesting start because he came out and said no player should be on social media, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, he wrote a column. I mean, I'm sure that's, you know, massaged. I'm not sure if that's Jason Witten sitting down at the computer.
That's when he calls an editor and says the column, and the editor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just as told to, but whatever. Yeah. But he said what he said, and yeah, that was somewhat interesting. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, they are hyping themselves up. I mean, I had a column with Booger McFarland where he said that the other broadcasts, most of the other NFL broadcasts, are stale,
right,
and that they're going to be more fun. So, you know, I do think that raised eyebrows from other broadcasters around the NFL who are like, well, you know, I didn't think we were stale.
Right.
So I do think there's a spotlight on them. But I will say this, that's what you want. I mean, the idea that you don't want, you know, do you want players doing that where they're on a team? Maybe not. But do you want broadcasters to say provocative things? Yeah, you do. So,
well, I'll be honest. I think they will be a fun broadcast, and I'm looking forward to it. I just think that first game, I just wish they were doing any game but Gruden. But I think Tessitore is great. Again, Witten, who knows? McFarland, who knows? But I think with Tessitore being there, I think it's got the potential to be a very good broadcast booth. My issue is really it's going to be that first game, which, you know, is just going to be so over the top. But I could see that being a fun booth. I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be interesting. And they got some ideas that Booger's going to be in the Booger cart on the sideline going up and down. So
I'm not thrilled.
They're definitely going to try to be different.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm not thrilled right now with Witten because I thought his take was so stupid. Because the issue is not social media. The issue is what players are saying.
He seems sort of bland. I mean, look, let's give him a chance.
Right.
He seems kind of bland to me. Kind of like what Booger was talking about. He was an iconic player, but he's close to a Hall of Famer, maybe a Hall of Famer, you know, tight end. And he's sort of that type of guy who has the name, and we don't know yet if he has the substance. I mean, he's never done a game.
Right.
So, and what I've seen from him, again, very straightforward, give you some stuff, but again, limited what we've seen so far, but, you know, not necessarily looking to offend or to break it down so deep. Maybe he will. Again, I think you really have to give him a chance before you make any decisions. And that's just initially what I've seen when he's been in, you know, NFL Live with these pop-ins that they've been doing and that type of thing.
Let's do a couple of New York things. I said this the minute it happened, and I stand by this, my opinion will not change. You will never hear Joe Beningo's voice ever again on WFAN. Do you agree or disagree?
Now, I'm not being a reporter for right now, okay? So I haven't reported anything saying that, so I will let it play itself out. But as someone using common sense and having talked to people, I think you have a good instinct if I were predicting.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know, I think that regardless of the circumstances of the whole situation, what's ultimately going to prevail in terms of for Joe is if he has said anything or done anything that's been untoward over the past few years. And I think that they likely will find something internally where, you know, some of these allegations, probably not all of them, and I don't think he had any sway over this woman's career, but I do think that he's probably not going to be back.
Now, it has to play out, but let's say he does not come back. I mean, he's on leave right now. By the time the football season rolls around, FAN's going to make a move. What do you think they do 10-1, Evan Roberts? Partner, solo?
I think the obvious move would be to split up CMB, and I'd probably say maybe Bart goes with Evan, and you have Carlin and Maggie together from 2-4, and they're from, and Bart and Evan from 10-1. I mean, you could do it other ways because, you know, right now they're paying too many people for how many spots they have, you know, because of when Francesa came back.
Right.
So it would make more sense to do that. Now, the wild card is JJ, John Jastrzemski, who is kind of gotten a little bit of buzz. I've helped him with that a little bit because I think, you know, he does have a different sound, a little bit like Russo. You know, jury's still out if he knows what he's talking about, if the content's really good. But when you listen to him, to me, there's a uniqueness to him that is fun to listen to from what I've heard. And so I do think perhaps he has a shot. I could also see him kind of being on with Francesa a little bit more, you know, as a protege of sorts for Mike. And he really livens up that show when he's been on it. So even, you know, to help Mike get a little bit more juice into that program.
I'm just thinking about what you said. You know, if you move Bart Scott to the Evan Roberts slot, the only the problematic thing with that is, I think most people agree. I can't say that I've listened immensely, but most people's opinion is that Bart is the weak link on that show. And now, if he moves to the Roberts show, he's on for 3 hours.
Do you have inside information on that, Jimmy?
In terms of what?
Inside information of anybody you know who thinks he's the weak link?
No, I'm talking about fans, people who listen to the station.
Oh, okay, fans. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
So then he's on for 3 hours a day as opposed to two. Does that fight? But I mean, in football, see, I think the problem people have with Bart Scott is the baseball stuff. But during football season, you probably want him on 3 hours a day.
Yeah, football, he's tremendous. Yeah. Baseball,
right,
really awful. Right. I know he's trying. I've been told a number of times from people from FAN he's working his butt off, and I'm sure he is. It's just you can't make up not knowing the history, not knowing the game. He called runs points once when I was listening. You just can't do it. I mean, you're on New York Sports Radio. I think comes across well. His personality is good, but
I think,
yeah, the baseball aspect.
And
is
I think,
an
yeah,
issue.
And I think people should give him a chance during the football season because he will bring a unique perspective. The guy was on the NFL Today, for God's sake. He can talk about the NFL.
And the thing I like about him too, last point, is that he's not only into like the X's and O's, but he'll give you transaction stuff, which a lot of ex-players sometimes don't. They're not as interested in it, and you can tell he's still very interested in that part of the game.
Yeah.
And he gives you a little – he knows stuff, and he gives you a little bit, which, you know, he knows more football than anybody on that station.
All right, let me ask you the most important question in all of New York sports right now at the moment. What is going on with Mike Francesa's app?
Yeah, I have a little something on that I'm going to – it's like one of his – I'm not going to say yet because I'll probably write something eventually about it. But yeah, I think he's working on it. He's talked about it coming out in August. And, you know, I think he'll be subscription-based, as he's kind of said.
So is what you're going to write about, do you have the like, groundbreaking thing he's going to be doing that he said no one else knows how to do and that he's reinventing apps and – is that what your column has?
Maybe I'll find that. I don't think there's a groundbreaking. I mean, no. I think maybe in his mind there might be a groundbreaking.
But he said he's going to do stuff with apps that no one's ever done before.
That's the whole deal now, isn't it? That's the whole deal, that he's going to do apps, and then it's basically going to be radio.com. I mean,
is his app completely pay? There's going to be no free portion of it?
No, I'm not saying that. No, I don't think so. I think he already said that his NFL show will be on there
for free or for pay.
Pay for the app to hear that, but yeah, I don't think people.
Wait! The Sunday night show, for the Sunday morning show, free or pay?
I don't know, but
oh boy,
you
can't make people pay for that show. Come on,
I don't think many people would pay for it.
No.
But I did have someone tweet at me that the app will separate the super fans from the psychopaths. So
aren't they all psychopaths?
Maybe there are people. Are there enough people to pay? I mean, again, we talk about The Athletic. You don't need that many people to pay to make it successful.
Right,
I mean, maybe not in his eyes. But
right,
you don't
need
that many people.
I'm not trying to be a wise ass here. I'm asking this legitimately as like the host of the show.
Yeah.
And I don't. If you can't mention it because you're writing about it, fine. I respect that. What can he give people that they'd pay for?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah,
okay.
I don't know. I'm not saying, even if I do, it's not like I think necessarily be successful, but...
Well, forget successful. What exactly...
Here's the thing. Let's just cut to the chase there. The app, yes, he's going to do an app, but that was all a front. The app thing isn't
real. Yeah, but Andrew,
real.
He said he came back for the app.
I know I don't know if you know this, Jimmy.
Don't tell me he made that up.
No, he sometimes has trouble with the truth. I know it's hard to believe.
All right.
Funhouse on Twitter, of Francesa, you know, has clips where he says one thing, and then 10 minutes later, it's like different. Yeah, so sometimes Mike seems to have trouble with the truth. I think this is one of those times.
I find it shocking that
here's the thing about the app. Here's the thing about the app. You don't need to come back to WFAN to do an app. You could have done an app with CAA.
I find this shocking that he didn't come back for the app. This is major breaking news right here, because he said he came back for the app, so... all right, let's move on from the Pope. Last one, and we're going to end on a very depressing note. And sorry to do this to everyone, but it's very sad. The Daily News, you write for the Post, and the Post I thought was very classy throughout. Bloodbath at the Daily News, more than 50% of the staff cut. Sports staff went from 35 to 9. You work at a newspaper. Can they survive like this?
I'm hoping they can. I don't know. I can't speak for the exact financials of either place. I do know that the Post has been on the way up, that, you know, the most recent last month that we had in the user information category, we were 13th. We passed BuzzFeed overall for, but yeah, it's going to be, you're going to have to be web focused, app focused. You have to be, build your business. You can't just, it's not just a one-way street. You have to have other revenue streams. Our circulation is still pretty high. I believe it's near 300,000. I could be wrong on that. Don't quote me. Like I said, 13th news and information, CNN is one. I think we're kind of getting closer, knocking on that door to the top 10 where we can, maybe get into there. So we're going up, on a personal level. And, for me, I wouldn't have left ESPN if I didn't think that the Post was going to be in business. Now, I don't know that for certain, I felt good enough about it to make that move.
Listen,
obviously ESPN's laying off people, too, so it wasn't exactly that's a steady ship at the moment for an individual. So bottom line, though, is they're going to have to transform. And if you believe that Vox is worth all this money and BuzzFeed is worth all this money, well, then you have to probably figure out the internet as well as you can as you move away from print, because the actual paper edition, in 5 years, 10 years, likely won't be around. Maybe quicker, maybe longer.
Right.
But yeah, that's not going to be. Well, do you know anybody under 30 if they ever bought a newspaper? Most of them probably haven't.
Right, no doubt. And that's the thing about it is I'm not naive. I'm in this business. I work for a website. I know the struggles. I know the challenges. So I'm not surprised that something would happen like this. What surprised me, though, is, maybe if you're not from New York, you don't get it. But in New York, where there's a million sports teams, to me, that's where you can, if you're the Post, the Daily News, capitalize, make money, draw interest, is with covering the sports. And they decimated their sports department. That's what I found most shocking. New York people, New York sports fans consume it. Yankees, Mets, everything. Jets, Giants, Knicks.
It's clear, though, Jimmy, that Tronc had no plan. They basically admitted that.
Right.
So when the people they let go, nobody should say, there's nothing wrong with the people they let go.
Right.
They were just unlucky. And so, yes, you're right. They have no plan, and that's an issue. It is expensive to cover teams. I will say this, though. Someone is going to have to cover them. There is, like you said, there is interest at a different level, and there's kind of an authority level that even people who sometimes think that, reporters are bad or whatever, we're all biased and we're all this, that. And the other thing is, I would just say, when you look at websites, where does most of the information come from? Now, some of the reporting anybody could do. If you go to Aaron Boone's press conference and he says something, you write it down and report that. That's not a skill. But there is something about knowing what's important, what's not important, knowing the game. And also, this is the specific thing, is knowing how to get information, to get more information and have more information. The issue, of course, is that once you have the information, then it's everybody can use that information. So how do you make it so people come to your website and make it so there's value and make the whole advertising aspect work? It's a big puzzle that's hard to put together. But, the Daily News with Tronc especially wasn't really trying.
Sad. Very sad. Part of the reason I do what I do is because I, would buy the Daily News and the Post every day when I was in high school and college. So it's a bummer. It's an absolute bummer.
Yeah, it stinks. Yeah. It really does stink. Yeah. And, I'm a Post guy, even when I was at ESPN, I used to say I still believe black and red because that's where I was first hired as a young person.
All right. No need to wave the pom-poms and,
try to get a
raise. Don't use the SI Media podcast. Don't use the SI Media podcast to try to get a raise.
When you thought about the Daily News and the Post, we were at each other. It was a real war. I remember I got in trouble once when T.J. Quinn was at the Daily News, I did an interview at the Big Lead. This was years ago. And then he said something. They asked me something about the Daily News, and I said, you know, something like, I don't know, something about being friends with T.J. Quinn, and he's at the Daily News then. And I don't know, my boss called me. I was in trouble, but it was just sort of, it wasn't, I don't know if I should have, like, said, I don't know, they didn't want that in there, perhaps. And so it's been heated over years.
Right.
And so for it to end this way, you know, because it's basically over, is very sad. It's not the way you want to win.
You said about getting in trouble and heated and something. So you just jogged my brain and reminded me of something. So now we can end on something much more cheery than the Daily News demise.
Good.
So you got in a big Twitter thing with James Andrew Miller and Jason Whitlock. It was like a three-way thing going on there over John Skipper. And you usually stay out of the Twitter fray like that. I thought it was very interesting to see you mix it up. But you were on the same side as Jason Whitlock, which is, you know, not great. What's the beef there?
Yeah, I should say what I thought, even if it's on the same side as Jason Whitlock.
Give you pause is what it should do.
Okay.
So you think James Andrew Miller is in the tank for John Skipper?
I think, yeah, I said that. I think I wrote that I find it nauseating that he says that, you know, all ESPN employees like you so popular.
Right.
When he was responsible for laying off 500 people, and it seems like.
But is he really the one responsible for that?
I mean, are you really going to make this argument?
Well,
he's the president. Hold on a second. Right. He's the president of ESPN. They laid off 500 people. You're telling me you don't think he has responsibility in there?
There's a big difference between having responsibility and being responsible, as if he's the only one. I mean, it's a Disney corporation thing.
I guess he wasn't the only one.
Right.
But he's not an innocent bystander. He isn't doing stats and information and feeding people stats for SportsCenter so they can say their little intros and, you know, have a good stat about the Mets.
Right, but is
he's
he laying...
the president of ESPN.
Right, but is
he's the one who made the deals with the NFL.
Right.
He's the one who made a deal with the U.S. Open Tennis. Did the ESPN need the U.S. Open Tennis for $75 million?
Sure.
Probably not.
They need programming.
You think they do?
Live program. There's still nothing better than live programming for sports.
I get it, but they paid 75. I don't know exactly what CBS was offering.
Well, I mean, look,
Jimmy, less than 75.
Fox just paid billions for 13 NFL games a year. I mean, you know, the prices for sports packages are outrageous. U.S. Open, NFL, whatever, NBA, whatever it is, everyone's paying ridiculous. Look what Fox just paid for WWE.
Okay, but all right. That doesn't mean it's right.
I'm just saying.
The bottom line is I would say Skipper's reign was not very good.
I think you
can go over decision after decision, and it's hard to find many good ones.
I'm not defending him, and I'm not saying he didn't make mistakes. All I'm saying is, I don't think, you know, he wanted to lay those people off. I think business for a cable company in the age of streaming and cord cutting, there are things out of his control that he wasn't responsible for. That's what I'm saying. Yes, he may have played a role in some of those.
But here's the thing. Yes. But here's the thing that.
I mean, he was the president when the cord cutting really was at its peak and beginning to really make, you know, do damage to people.
I get it. I get how hard it was to predict cord cutting. I get it. I guess most, if not all, people kind of missed how quickly it came about. But that was his job.
Fair.
Okay?
That's fair.
That might be like, you know, hard, but he got paid. I have no idea what he got paid, but he made a lot of money.
Right.
His job was to foresee that when he was doing all these deals, okay, doubling the NBA contract, which might be a good deal, might not be. I mean, everyone's like, it's a great deal because NBA is hot. The NBA is hot, but ESPN also doubled how much they were paying for it. So, and maybe that is the deal. Maybe it's not.
It's a good deal because what the NBA has done for ESPN is nothing but positive.
Yeah, but you act like, but then it's like, then you should just pay anything for everything.
Well, that's what all these companies
are
doing.
That's not, you don't know what the books are, which I don't. I'm not saying I do, but
I know that they get. I know they get $8 or $9 a household.
They do, but there's less people paying that.
Right.
So would you have been better off? So they made the deal for so much because Fox Sports 1 was trying to get in on it. And I'm not saying, I'm not privy to what the negotiations were. But let's say Fox had gotten a game of the week for $400 million and ESPN had spent $400 million less. Would they be in better? Is that a better scenario for ESPN or a worse scenario?
Well, Fox would be in a lot better position if they had an NBA game once a week. I know that for sure. So
maybe. But ESPN would probably be in the exact same position if you're talking monetarily. They probably would not have lost one subscriber, you know, and one more subscriber than they already are losing, and they would have saved $400 million. That's his job.
All right, I'll let
$75 million for the U.S. Open. $75 million for the U.S. Open when CBS was paying, offering either a third of that or a little more than a third of that, most likely. How is that? Do you really need the U.S. Tennis Open if you're ESPN? You have to have it.
Andrew, what's going to be on Mike Francesa's app that people are going to pay for? I'll let you win the John Skipper argument. Just what are people going to pay for in Mike Francesa's app? I got to know.
What I don't think they're going to. I mean, I don't know if they're going to pay for it or not. But I think he'll probably, you know, have. I'm going to write an article, and then maybe I'll come back on.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. Thanks for your time today. This was fun, and you will obviously be back. Let's get all that information on Mike's app, please.
All right, thanks,
all right,
Jimmy.
Thanks much. All right, take care. All right, that wraps up this edition of the SI Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Trana. My thanks to Ken Rogers from Hard Knocks, senior coordinating producer from NFL Films. Good behind-the-scenes stuff on that legendary show. And my thanks to New York Post media reporter Andrew Marchand. Good conversation about a multitude of topics. So good stuff today. I appreciate you listening, and we will see you next week. Next week, on the SI Media Podcast, the entire cast of Good Morning Football in studio. So that should be good. And looking forward to that. So we'll see you next week on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.